When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me.
This is Ken Carpenter welcoming you to Philco Radio Time, produced and transcribed in Hollywood with John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, the Rhythm Ayers, and Bing's guest, Frankie Lane. Now at this Thanksgiving, with all of America eating and wasting less food, our Thanksgiving tables will not be groaning with delicacies. However, at this time, we bring you a man who groans all year long, Bing Crosby.
Thank you. Now, Ken, if you'll relinquish your half of the microphone to the Rhythm Ayers, I'll share mine with John Trotter and the orchestra, and we shall all dance nimbly around the old chaperone.
Mira, here comes Maria. Es muy simpático, no?
Julio is phenomenal. But look, whoop. Who's with her? La duenna, the chaperone, the cook.
You can't do anything with a chaperone.
No, malo, muy malo.
A handsome young man met a pretty young maid, andando in old Barcelona. Andando means walking, and that's all they did, 'cause she had an old chaperone, a crone. She had an old chaperone. Maria the girl noticed Pedro the boy, a winking right there in the calle. Well, calle means street, and no one can make love in the street with an old chaperone, a crone. No, not with an old chaperone.
The old chaperone was her tia, and tia means Annie in Spain.
She may have been aunt to Maria, but to Pedro she was a big pain. So Pedro just smiled at Maria the maid, his dientes they sparkled and shone. Dientes means teeth, and that's just where he'd like to have kicked the old chaperone, the crone, the bothersome old chaperone.
Pedro then said,
dear, if we were alone, I'd ask for your mano in marriage.
No, mano means head.
And that's just what he got across the chops from the old chaperone.
A heart of stone had the old chaperone.
Why don't you go away, said the old chaperone. You're blubbering like a paloma.
Paloma's a bird.
And that's just what he gave her.
And then he cried in an anguished tone.
I hate you, you old chaperone. Hate you.
And then came the day of fiesta. Fiesta, the people all roared.
It sounded like they said siesta. So Auntie just stayed home and snored.
Auntie was dreaming, the lovers were beating, they danced and they sang in the plaza.
Now plaza means square, but nobody there was as square as the old chaperone. For she left the two lovers alone. They respectfully thanked the old crone. They said, gracias, old chaperone.
They said, gracias, old chaperone.
Hey, Julio.
Sí.
Now I got the big news for you.
Sí?
Now we are married.
Ah, bueno. But tell me, what happened to the old chaperone?
Now she is the babysitter. Oh. Dos pesos per day, time and a half, on cumpleaños. Sí. Sí.
Bingolito.
Gracias, Sino Carpenter.
Oh, it's nada, Bingolito, it's nada.
Say, Carve, you kick this stuff around pretty good, don't you? Why don't you fling your commercial at him in Spanish?
Oh, I couldn't do that, but...
Yeah, you might sell a lot of Philcos in the Spanish-speaking parts of the world. Mexico, Spain, Nutley, New Jersey, Perth Amboy, anyway.
Well, I don't know enough Spanish for that, Bing.
Why, sure, you could just say, ladies and people, I'm not talking through my sombrero when I tell you that a nice Philco... we'll bring you many buenas noches, it looks like.
Looks like,
si.
Well, Bing, that's very good, but I think for our English-speaking audience, we should be more explicit.
Okay, my talkative friend, go ahead and explain.
Well, thank you, Senor Crosby.
Si, I'm leaving.
Well, say it in any language you like. You get the most for your radio money when you say Philco. Take Philco's new table model automatics. They give you more than just a warmed-over version of the same old radio and record changer. Their design is new. They're new all the way through, with more power and finer performance than any table radio phonograph you ever listened to. No shortcuts, no shoddy workmanship, but quality construction from the circuit clear through to the cabinet. Compare these new Philcos for tone, and your own ear will tell you more than a book full of bromides. Compare them for price, and you'll appreciate the value. Made possible by the resources of the world's largest radio manufacturer, Philco, famous for quality the world over.
I've never heard you better.
Thank you.
So bland, so unctuous. Let's give him a hand, folks. Now let us turn our attention to Philco's guest of the evening, a flashy young fellow who zoomed to a prominent position in the category indexed as vocalist, popular. The lad who's fracturing the folks from Philadelphia to Fresno with his snazzy singing style is Frankie Lane. Frankie, two paces forward, take a deep bend from the midriff. Frankie, come on right in now and relax.
Hiya, Bing.
Good.
Gosh, ever since I can remember, I wanted to be on your program, and now that I'm here, I wish I was dead.
Frankie. I understand it's just a matter of days until you open at the New York Paramount. You know, Frankie, that's where I got my first big shot, the good old Paramount Theater at 14th and Broadway.
But, Bing, the Paramount Theater's at 43rd and Broadway, right on Times Square.
Oh, that's right. They built a new one.
A new one?
Yes. When I played the Paramount, it was at 14th Street. The Indians were still holding Times Square. But I certainly want to tell you, Frankie, in all sincerity, I like that style, that bouncy style you've got. If you'd like to sing that tune that helped to bring you so much national recognition, we'd certainly like to hear it. That's my desire. Would you like to knock that?
Well,
Well, Frank, look, we got a wonderful little group here all set. Come on, let's have it, huh? John Scott, a little 8-beat background for Frankie. I'm any judge, Frankie. You're here to stay for a long, long time. You know, folks, Thanksgiving Day is a purely American holiday. Yet somehow we sometimes fail to appreciate all the things that we collectively have to be thankful for. Today, especially in the wake of a war with demagogues and bigots attempting to set one group of Americans against another, it seems more vital than ever to me that we pause to consider the ideas and the ideals from which our nation has sprung. A few weeks ago in our nation's capital, the most precious documents belonging to the people of the United States were removed from the archives and placed aboard the Freedom Train. This week, the Freedom Train is in Baltimore, Washington, and Charlottesville, Virginia. When it hits your hometown, you ought to go down to the station and get aboard. Look at those words of liberty, those documents of justice, those papers that guarantee equality for all Americans. It'll remind you that we, as Americans, have much to be thankful for. Not only today, but as long as we are free men. Believing this, we would like to bring you tonight a story of a man who turned his back on his heritage.
Order in the court. Order in the court. The attorney for the state will kindly continue.
Mr. Nolan, is it not true that you are part of a conspiracy to destroy the government of the United States?
No, that is not true. That is not true, I tell you.
Do you dare to deny your friendship with Aaron Burr?
No, I don't deny that, but I do deny your accusations of treason.
Lieutenant Nolan, Aaron Burr has shown himself repeatedly to be an enemy of the United States government. As an American officer, your country's enemies are your enemies. By your association with Aaron Burr, you betrayed the uniform you wear, the flag you follow, the country you profess to serve. That is true, is it not, Lieutenant Nolan?
No, it is not true. It is not true.
Do you still dare to defend your association with Aaron Burr?
I don't think it needs defending. I only talk to the man.
You don't think it needs defending? You need say no more, Lieutenant Nolan. I rest my case, Your Honor.
Philip Nolan, rise and face the court. Philip Nolan, is there anything you wish to say to show that you have always been faithful to the United States?
The United States! Damn the United States! I wish I may never hear of the United States again!
Who was that man? Who would dare utter such treason? Come over closer to the radio, America. I want to tell you a story about you and your growing. This is not a story of a national hero, but of Philip Nolan, who severed a bond before he knew its value. Listen to the story of the man without a country. Think back, way back to the 1800s. Remember? You were still an adolescent then. You were proud of being a nation of 17 states. You were beginning to speak grandly of adding Michigan, Indiana, and Mississippi and becoming 20. Zealous old Tom Jefferson was in the White House. And down in the South was a man named Aaron Burr. And a man named Philip Nolan. They say now that history has sifted the facts, weighed the evidence, they say Philip Nolan was as fine as any officer in the Western Division. Oh, he was a little more hot-headed than some, a little swifter to anger than others, and a little too quick sometimes about getting his two cents of opinion in, but he was not alone in this. There were many dashing young gallants like him, as ready to die for a kiss as a flag. And Philip Nolan might have gone to his final sleep among the vine-covered homes of the dead in Orleans as quietly as any of them, had a star not crossed his path one night.
Mr. Nolan, I am Aaron Burr. I'm told you are a young man of remarkable promise. I should like to talk with you about your future.
Why, thank you, sir. I don't know what to say. Thank you very much.
A star comes that way sometimes. Sudden, blinding, dazzling. Aaron Burr came as a disguised conqueror. Rumor had it that there was an army behind him and an empire before. But that first day in Orleans, though Philip Nolan wasn't to know it for a long time yet, he became the man without a country. It was only a step from Aaron Burr's side to a trial for treason.
The United States versus Philip Nolan.
He was bewildered, deeply hurt, embittered. Above all else, he was young. An older man would have checked his anger. A traitor would have been wise enough to hide his feelings. But Philip Nolan was neither a wise man nor a traitor. A moment's silence. And then those words that were to echo forever through his life.
I wish I may never hear of the United States again!
I wish I may never hear of the United States again.
I wish I may never hear of the United States again. I wish I may never hear of the United States.
The words filled the courtroom, shivered against the walls. No one spoke. No word fell to combat those other words. Half the officers in the room had served through the revolution. They had fought their way, starved and frozen through endless bitter months, so that one day a people could say, "This is my country." The judge and the jury rose. They left the court wordlessly. No one else stirred. Someone in the back of the room sighed. Someone else coughed. That was all. 15 minutes went by like 15 years before the judge returned.
Prisoner, hear the sentence of the court. The court decides, subject to the approval of the president, that you shall have your wish. You will never hear the name of the United States again.
It was the fall of 1807. It would be 1863 before he heard her name again. The leaves would go red in Maryland soon. They would be piled along the Potomac for burning. Their smoke would spiral into lace against the November skies. They would be tapping the trees for maple sugar in the Vermont woods. And the New England housewives would gather in their spiced kitchens to prepare the Thanksgiving puddings. The Cape Cod fishermen would go out in the misty dawn for their nets. And the harvest would be a bright promise on the Indiana hillsides. The Blue Ridge and the Alleghenies and the Rockies would pull the snow up over their shoulders and settle down for the winter. And the Mississippi would go slipping on through the heart of America. There would be hearth fires and Christmas trees. There would be dances. There would be church service and wedding ceremonial and baptismal. But not for Philip Nolan. His was the sea and the bitterness of salt on his lips, and no port at evenings. And in one sudden heart-stabbing moment, Philip Nolan knew what he had lost.
Sir, you will receive from Lieutenant Neal the person of Philip Nolan, later Lieutenant in the United States Army. You will take the prisoner on board your ship and keep him there with such precautions as shall prevent his escape. You will provide him with such quarters, rations, and clothing as would be proper for an officer of his late rank. But under no circumstances is he ever to hear of his country or to see any information regarding it.
So Philip Nolan walked the decks of the seven seas and thought about America. But he never asked about her. He talked with his shipmates about the weather, about the sea, about all things, but home. In foreign parts, where he was rarely permitted to go ashore, he filled his days with reading. But in the books and papers given him, there was no mention of America. For him, she was only a dream that had ceased existing. He was a ghost among his companions, drifting from port to port, listening to a word that filled his heart, that reached him in the wind, that sighed from the rigging, that the waves whispered through the midnight. One word, America.
The grass is blue in Kentucky this spring. Wouldn't you like to ride through it with the earth hard and firm under your horse's feet? Think of it, earth. Under you.
The flower girls are in the streets of Orleans now. It's almost time for the Mardi Gras. Remember the girl you kissed at the Mardi Gras?
The fields are white with cotton now. The slaves are singing. What would you give to hear their voices?
The snow is thick and white in New England. They're riding through it to the Christmas parties. Can't you hear the sleigh bells? How long is it since you heard the sleigh bells?
Leave me alone. I can't stand thinking anymore. Oh. God, let me stop remembering.
I wish I may never hear of the United States again. I wish I may never hear of the United States again. The court decides, subject to the approval of the president, that you shall have your way.
No! No! No!
Philip Nolan could never find peace. Ships docked, set sail. Men went home on leave. He watched in wordless agony. He thought of candlelight on warm, gracious tables, of gardens where a man could crumble the rich soil in his fingers, of linens whipping on clotheslines and the friendly smells of kitchens. He thought of moonlight on hair that was soft as silk to the touch, of eyes liquid in the starlight, of lips velvet smooth and ripe for kissing. He thought of arms open wide to gather in the returning sailor, and one special voice that would say, "Welcome home." He thought of perfume and music and the rustle of silk, He was young, and there was a fierce hunger in him. And then one night in the Mediterranean, some ladies were invited aboard for a ship's ball. All that was young in Philip Nolan died that night. As he stood on deck looking at the girl he had loved a lifetime ago.
Anne Emery.
Why, Philip Nolan. This is a surprise. You're looking splendid, Philip. The sea evidently agrees with you.
I'd forgotten how lovely you are.
You must have forgotten many things.
It's almost impossible to believe, finding you again.
I'm on my way home. I've been visiting in France.
I tried to see you before I left. They wouldn't let me see anyone.
I understand. I was very busy at the time, anyhow. I was married soon after you left.
Married?
Yes, of course. Hadn't you heard? I have a little boy now.
A little boy? You must be very happy.
I am, Philip.
So strange that we should meet again way out here.
I'm a little sorry we did meet. I had forgotten you. It was better that way.
I love you very much. I loved you, and I lost you and everything else I loved in one mad moment. Oh, my dear.
I think we should get back to the dances.
Yes, of course. Anne, would you tell me just one thing? What do you hear from home?
Home? Mr. Nolan? I thought you were the man who never wanted to hear of home again.
I beg your pardon. Good night, Anne.
Philip Nolan knew in that moment how alone he was. One man with only the sea for the rest of his life. And one nameless port at the end of it. The days became weeks. The weeks, years that marched across his forehead and left him old. His eyes were deep pools of loneliness. His heart completely empty. No one knew until the day he was dying how deep his hurt had gone. No one knew until that day when they entered his room for the first time. And they founded a shrine to America. The stars and stripes were draped around a picture of Washington, and he had painted a majestic eagle winging gloriously up into the sky. At the foot of his bed was a great map of the United States, drawn from memory, with almost forgotten names on it, the Indian Territory, the Mississippi Territory.
Here, Captain, you see, I have a country.
Yes. I see, Nolan. How do you feel? Anything I can do for you?
Captain, I'm dying. I'll never see my country again. But there's not a man on this ship or in all the United States that loves her as I do. Would you tell me about America?
Tell you about America? How can I begin to tell you about America?
He had left America in 1807. It was 1863. War had come and gone in 1812. And Francis Scott Key had sat on a British battleship and written the national anthem. Jackson had taken the Florida Territory. A new flag had been raised in Washington with 13 alternate stripes and 20 stars. 9 presidents had been in the White House. And the Monroe Doctrine had been born, the cornerstone of American foreign policy.
The continents of the Western Hemisphere are henceforth not to be considered as subjects for future colonization by any of the European powers.
The United States had begun to gather themselves into a nation.
It is not the states, but the people of the nation who have made the Union. It is the people's constitution, the people's government, made for the people, answerable to the people.
Tell him about America. Tell him about Peter Cooper's steam locomotive, the Tom Thumb, drawing its first train of cars over 23 miles of the B&O Railroad. Tell him about America. Andrew Jackson had moved the Indians west of the Mississippi. Arkansas, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa had joined the nation. The Battle of the Alamo had been fought in Texas. gold discovered in California, and a new nation had spanned two oceans. The South and the North were deep in their quarrel over slavery, and in the White House was the president whose words
last
were the voice of the new nation.
Measure of devotion, that we here resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Tell him about America. The power, the color, the strength, the beauty, the tears, the triumphs. Tell him so that he knows the glory he thrust aside.
She's a great nation, Captain. A great nation.
Yes, Nolan. A great nation. Nolan! Nolan!
And so his last thought was of his country. Before they lowered him into the sea, they draped the flag of the United States over his coffin. How proud that would have made him. The captain intoned the last rites, the bugler played taps, and the ceremony was over.
Men, we found this paper in Nolan's things. Bury me in the sea. It has been my home, and I love it. But will someone not set up a stone for my memory at Fort Adams or at Orleans, so that my disgrace will not follow me through eternity? Say on it, in memory of Philip Nolan, lieutenant in the Army of the United States. He loved his country as no other man has ever loved her, but no man deserved less at her hands. We will do as he wished.
And so, although the sea claimed him, his soul would know the feeling of land again. The flowers would be near him, and the trees, and the earth of America. He would know the seasons and the pulsing life of the nation. There would be a flag over him and the knowledge of belonging. And thus, the man without a country came home to America.
Every American has plenty to be thankful for. Philco Corporation, its distributors and dealers everywhere, join in wishing you a happy Thanksgiving and invite you to tune in next week when Bing's guest will be Al Jolson. The poetic narrative based on the story by Edward Everett Hale was written by Gene Holloway and directed by Robert L. Welch. The musical score was composed by Victor Young and conducted by John Scott Trotter. This program was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Bill Morrow and Murdo McKenzie.